The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
It's come down to this. 100 laps, 5 to go at the line. 5 cars nose to tail heading down into turn number 1. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
Check, check.
Time.
Check, 1-2.
3 laps to go as they cross the start finish line. Going down into turn number 1. They start to fan out. Coming off a 2. They're side by side down the back straightaway.
Inside Florida Racing.
That's it. Coming off a turn 4. White flag in the air. Checkers are records. Anybody's races. They go down to turn number 1. They fan out. 2 by 2. 3 wide. Coming off of turn number 2, they get sideways down the back straightaway. Someone breaks loose to the top, trying to make the run up on the high side. Going to do it the hard way around. Coming around 4, there's still 2 by 2. 3 cars drop back. It's 1 car coming out sideways. Who's on the inside? Coming to the line. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing. Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Jack from Real Racing USA.
Inside Florida Racing. Folks, I hope you're out there. I hope you can hear us.
I'll play some more commercials if you want me to.
No, we got struck. 8 stories in the air. We got struck by a big bolt of lightning and about lost everything. Jack's hair stood up. Carol fell out of her chair, and everybody's back. Carol.
Now it's a mess here.
Yes, you're listening.
We got one exciting, fun show tonight, and in the studio is none other than Chaplain Bill Ross, who's a friend of all of Florida Racers, but he's also got some background with our guests, who will be Bug Stevens, Bill Wimble, Lou Boyd, and Joy Gilder. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Oh, it's good to be here. Yeah, I talked to Lou a couple of minutes ago, and he's probably praying for me now because I told him I used to drive for Nasty Neil before he did, and he felt bad for me. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun show.
Nasty Neil, it sounds like a bunch of wrestlers.
Yeah.
Could have been.
Could have been. He's a pretty good-sized boy. It could have been, but I told Lou I'm probably part of the reason they called him Nasty because I wasn't very nice.
Yeah. That's how most of you ordained ministers are.
That's how I was, yeah. But thank God I'm not that way anymore.
You this saw proves, the light.
proves God can save anybody, right?
It really does. It really does, yes.
Well, folks, you're listening to Rob Elting here, a.k.a. Bonehead, and Carol Wicks over here, and we don't have the hillbilly in the shop with
Jason
us today.
Jason Beckner had some stuff to take care of. He's had a lot of illness in his family, and unfortunately, he can't be here tonight.
That's not what I heard. I heard there was a deal going for overalls at Walmart, and that's where he's at.
In case some of you don't know, a couple of years ago, I saw a story about Bug Stevens on the Norwood Arena site. Norwood's a racetrack that was shut down several years ago, and now I believe a parking lot. This is where I used to go when I was a young woman, and anyway, when I saw Bug Stevens' name mentioned, I looked everywhere I could to find this book that he had written, and Lou Boyd up in Massachusetts at Coastal 181 sent me an autographed copy of the book. Since then, he too has written a book, and I'm sorry, the wires are all crazy here.
She's bouncing around looking for books.
Yeah.
No, I'm not looking for books. I'm trying to get this wire out of my face. Lou's book is called Hot Cars and Cool Drivers, and Jack's trying to put my glasses on so I can see where I'm going.
And Bug Stevens' book is called
Bugsy. Anyway, that's what we're going to bring you tonight, a little bit of nostalgia. Joy Gilder is a fan in the stands. She's been to several tracks in the state of Florida, and you're probably wondering why we have her on a nostalgia show, because she's a very young girl that's local. We brought her back on because she got kind of left out last week. We ran out of time. So we're going to have Joy back on again today.
Isn't that beautiful?
Wow.
What do you think about that, Reverend?
I don't know why she called her loco.
That's what I heard, too. She is a little loco. We're going to find out later.
She's probably going to get on here and say, yep, that's me.
So let's recap a little bit. Last week, we did have a good show last week. A lot of controversy there on the message board. And I hope all that got capped off pretty good. No? It's all still the same. Well, that's good. You know, at least if you're being talked about on the message board or you're doing the talking, maybe somebody's listening. But let's talk about these guys that are going to be on the show, Carol. I'm really interested in this Bugsy character, Bug Stevens. He's got a lot of racing background. When's he going to be on? How soon?
As soon as I can get him on the phone. Right now, I think Lou Boyd's waiting for a phone call.
Well,
and
let me get that book out. Hold on. Where is that book? Let me see that book. All right. While we're waiting, Carol, since it is Inside Florida Racing, let's talk about Florida Racing over the weekend. Let's talk about a little bit how soaked some of the Florida Racing was, and let's talk about some of the other ones.
Incidentally, just because you're being such a fart face about Florida Racing, these gentlemen all live in Florida.
Well,
no. What does she mean by that?
That's why I brought them.
She really kind of
jumped. She's just trying to stir things. It's a good thing you're here, Bill.
Yeah, Reverend.
This improves my prayer life.
Yes. I got to tell you. I got to tell you something. My camera. I've had my camera about 4 or 5 years, and I really had a. You remember it was up at Lakeland not too long ago? You sang the national anthem, and I was taking your picture when you were doing the invocation. Okay. And then I took your picture when you started to sing the national anthem. And then I realized, you're singing the national anthem. So I started videotaping it. And it was really, really cool. I usually don't pay any attention to that. But, you know, usually the guy who does the invocation does not do the national anthem. I get home and my camera totally erased on its own all those pictures. I sent it to the factory and everything. It was so frustrating. So the next time I catch
no,
you,
No, let's
I
have
try,
him do it here. No, yeah, just
we're,
do it
we're
here.
We're going to do that.
Get your camera out. Have him sing it.
And
right now,
Florida Racing. I know you guys know what happened. I have no idea what happened in Florida, but I do know what happened to some Florida racers this weekend.
Well, let me first
go
say to Carol,
it. Go for it.
I didn't mean anything about that. These guys
I'm
aren't
teasing
from Florida.
You. I don't care what you meant.
I want to give them all the respect as possible because without these guys that we're
yes.
going to have on today, racing wouldn't be what it is today. Even though they're not going to take responsibility for the mess that we're in racing today, but that's a whole other story. Racing. Okay, I'll talk about my racing. My racing didn't go very well. I didn't do any racing. I ducked a tornado. I ducked flying debris. And I ducked a lot of rain.
Carol, did
sounds
you know
like a personal problem.
Did you know he actually raced? I didn't know that.
I didn't race this weekend.
Oh, I know who this is. This is the Bonehead.
Yeah. Get it right, okay?
Yeah.
The Bonehead. You got it right. So they didn't race in Charlotte County, but they did have a super late model race in Auburndale. That one I know.
And yes, they did.
And if Jack, who is from Inside Florida Racing, would maybe give me a little bit more clue.
What do you want to know?
I see they had a heck of a show at Auburndale. Heck of a show.
Didn't my little buddy Cody Pitts spank him?
Yes,
it looks
did.
Like your little buddy Cody Pitts did put
the young boys. The young boys put on a show. Were you there?
No, I was down here in the monsoon.
Oh, yeah, the young boys
praying
put on
that
a
we
show.
We didn't get in a tornado.
Kurt Jett, another youngster, did pretty good
yes.
up there.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting to see that they've got a heck of a showing of cars there, I tell you.
Yes.
And looks like a bunch of other classes. They ran sports and modified, mini, street stock, scrambler, strictly stocks, mini stock. Auburndale putting on a good show. They did get their show in. And as you hear, Cody Pitts did win. I guess I'll go ahead and give Dan Webster was second. Kurt Jett was third. Rusty was fourth. J.R. Garcia was fifth.
J.R.'s doing pretty good this year.
JR's
he bought
out.
Rich Pratt's old 00, yeah. and I don't know what he did to it, but, man, he's doing really good.
He didn't have to do much to it, I don't
think,
because Rich knows how to get them set up, you know. And, I would say that J.R. is definitely his racing's turned around. He probably doesn't even realize that we're watching him. He's under the eye.
Daniel Webster's another one. I swear he's going places. That kid is.
Where's he going?
Well, you never know.
Who knows?
Yeah. Saturday when I was at Lakeland.
It ain't about how good you are. It's about how much money you got.
Last week when I was at Lakeland and I saw the zero, I thought, oh, thank you, Lord, I'm going to get to see Rich Pratt. Because Rich and his folks, his mom is a super friend, a good friend of ours.
Yes.
And I saw that car and I thought, oh, man, Rich is going to be racing. And I went by and saw JR's name on it. And I wasn't disappointed, you know. But I'm looking at these kids like Cody Pitt, and I'm thinking, I got stuff in my refrigerator older than these kids that are racing. You know, just amazing.
Well, the kids today have really taken over. I mean, it's totally different. Me being 40, and most of the people that I'm racing against are 20 or younger.
There's a whole bunch of these guys went up to North Carolina this week to Orange County Speedway. Jeff Choquette, Chris Fontaine, Brandon Johnson.
And how'd they do?
David Wilson.
Sean Bass.
How'd they do? Any of them do any good?
Sean Bass, who went into the race as the points leader in the ASA Southern Division, whacked the wall on 23 or something like that. He hit the wall pretty hard, destroyed his car, tore front end off it. He was over there looking at his car on the back straight at disgust, and he just walked around towards turn four to watch the rest of the race when Chris Fontaine got together with David Wilson, and that ended up getting involving Brandon Johnson, Chris Fontaine, David Wilson, John West Townley, four or five other. There were six or seven cars, and they were all the points leaders.
He wanted to go push his car around the track.
So Jeff Choquette took advantage of the situation and decided he had set fast time, and he was really fast. He decided to not try and win the race, but go ahead and pedal around for 125 laps in third. Mm-hmm. He let Sean Murphy get ahead of him. Sean really wanted the race because Sean Murphy had wrecked last week on the last lap at Bristol when a wheel broke. And so he really wanted the win, but he couldn't this young kid who was driving a David Strimmy car, it was his first ASA race. He won the race. He led every lap.
Wow.
And but man, the whole points thing changed, turned upside down, and now Jeff Choquette leads the points in the ASA South Division.
Oh, beautiful. That's,
you know, it's funny about Orange County. You talk about Orange County Speedway. Several years ago when I lived in Carolina, we were going up there to race. I was working with this kid I worked with. His son drove. So I'm trying to find out something about the track. So everybody I asked, I said, tell me something about Orange County Speedway. Man, they got the best fried bologna sandwiches you ever had. I don't care about fried bologna sandwiches.
Wow.
Is it round? Is it square? Does it go up and down hills? And it seemed everybody I asked, boy, they got the best fried bologna sandwiches.
That's a fact.
We got there, and they were lined. I mean, they were four deep lined up. And somebody said, did you want a fried bologna sandwich? I said, not if I got to stand in that line. I'll be having a thing for breakfast.
If we lose any of you guys, we got a really bad storm overhead right now, so bear with us. We're doing the best we can.
It's tough being eight stories up in the air and having lightning going all over the place. I would say this is a lightning rod.
You
got to
stop getting high.
Well, we did. We stopped at eight stories, so, you know. And don't speak about getting high. We've got the reverend in here now. Have some reverence.
I forgot to say something. Go, Tony. Yes.
Uh-oh.
Okay, let's start a little NASCAR talk real quick. Tony Stewart did win the race. He did a great job.
Four out of six. Four out of six.
He's doing great. Smoke put it on him.
Nice guy.
I'm glad to see that Jeff Gordon got a little spin there at the end. And, it's not that
I actually felt bad for him. Not bad enough to cry, but I did feel bad.
It's good for the sport. It's good for the sport. Now,
Carl Edwards, holy mackerel.
I want to give a little call out to what my man Boris said.
What did Boris say?
Boris said that he decided he was going to take over telling people NASCAR how to run their series, I bet.
And I don't think he was telling them how to run a series. What I saw from him is...
Sounds familiar.
What I saw from him was the face of some financial grief, okay? It's similar to the rainout like we had the other night. That's financial grief when you've laid all your money into it and there's no way to recoup anything back. So for him, four out of the eight, and I don't want to make this a NASCAR show, so we'll get it done real quick. Four out of the last eight races have been a rainout. So I do believe that the good old boys of NASCAR need to get together, and if they're going to let the top 35 guys make it in the show every week, you have to do something for your other 14 or 15 teams that come to at least let those guys qualify for six spots. That's only fair. And what happens if all those guys quit racing and we got to watch 35 guys race every week? That's not going to be any good. So that's a little rant from me about NASCAR. NASCAR, you can kiss my ass, really. I really don't like NASCAR. You know, they've really got a strange way that they run things, you know, and, you know, that's just me ranting and raving. I didn't curse.
Very interesting on the online right now. Lou, you there?
Lou, can you hear me, Lou? Are you there, buddy?
I can just barely hear
you. Well, that's good, because we can hear you fine, so you don't have to yell. Lou, how you doing? This is Rob Elting, and you've got Carol Wicks here, and the Reverend Bill here, who you talked to just a minute ago.
Yes, indeed. I'm doing fine. How are you guys?
Just
awesome.
Wonderful.
Good.
Talk to us a little bit about what racing used to be like in what year was it? The 60s?
Oh my goodness! I to be perfectly honest with you, I've got a little gray on my temples, and I could tell you about racing pretty much back to about the early 50s.
Well, definitely things now are probably a little bit different than they were then. Correct?
Oh my gosh! It's really extraordinary. What's happened, and the thing about it is that there's really no aspect of racing that hasn't been affected. And if you guys will let me tell a little story, I'd like to do that, because I think it puts that comment in context a little bit. One of the things that a lot of people, I think, are worried about today, when we're seeing the short track struggling a little bit, is that racing's getting maybe a little bit too buttoned down and a little bit too politically correct, and maybe not quite as colorful as it used to be. And, you know, I've taken kind of an informal poll this summer, and I've been to quite a few short tracks. And I think that one of the problems is that, and one of the differences between racing today and racing in the old days, is that there are just too darn many officials these days. And if you go to a racetrack these days, it seems that anybody who has a little white shirt with their name on it seems to be some sort of village Napoleon bossing everybody around. And, you know, that's really not very good for the show. Now, come back with me to 1955, to Fonda Speedway, and let me tell you what it's like on the other end of the spectrum when the officials really don't even want to be there. Now, this was 1955 at Fonda Speedway in upstate New York, a major, major half-mile NASCAR dirt track where Pete Corey and lots of really strong runners ran. And one night, the guy who had been track champion, a fellow named Don Hendenberg, came into the track, and he was just a little bit tipsy. And he'd been at a wedding, and some of the other drivers said, "Hey, wait a minute, Hendenberg's not banging on all eight tonight. We don't want to race against him." So they went up to see Ed Hughes, who was the promoter, and they said, "Ed, that guy's been drinking, and we're not going to race against him." And Ed Hughes said the most unbelievable thing. He said, "It's not my job to police you guys." And can you believe that? And he said, "I won't have any part of it. But I'll tell you what, if you guys come up with a solution that seems reasonable to me and the fans, I'll go along with it." So all the drivers went and huddled among themselves, and they came back to Ed Hughes 5 minutes later, and they said, "Ed, tell you what, we want Don Hendenberg to go out and run five laps all by himself, and if he drives all right, we'll all be watching, it'll be okay with us." Ed Hughes said, "That sounds fine to me." Don Hendenberg goes out and went right through the fence.
That's one way to handle it.
Yeah, it sure is. But boy, oh boy, nobody would handle it that way today.
No, he'd be banned and kicked out.
He'd hit the wall. There wouldn't be a fence.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
They didn't have fences.
You guys are right. It really, it's changed just incredibly, the whole thing.
They didn't have fences and walls at the Pines when I raced there. They had sand piles.
And pines.
And Pine Speedway. Yeah.
You know, I want to say something here about Lou. You've met a huge variety of race car drivers in your life, correct?
Oh, I sure have.
So for me, a guy that really loves the history of racing, for to look through this book that you have. And I'm going to tell every folks what this book is. We talked about it a minute ago. Hot Cars, Cool Drivers. Celebrating 50 years of auto racing in Massachusetts, Westboro, the Pines, Norwood. Three really great tracks, three really great areas where a lot of great racers came from that basically pioneered our sport, you know, to what it's become. And if you could tell the folks, maybe, like, just get into maybe of a couple of drivers that you really recall that, like, really made a difference with their appearance at the racetrack, you know, being there.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've published that book about the Massachusetts tracks. We did a book about Old Bridge and Nazareth down in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, the Fonda book, the Richie Evans book, the Bugsy Stevens book. We've done all kinds of them. And for me, it's just been kind of just a dream come true, because every night when working on those books, of course, I got to call another one of these guys who used to be my heroes, and, you know, some of them I was even lucky enough to race against. And it was really thrilling to talk to all of them, and all of them had something special to offer. But I will say, when I called them up to do this book, it was a challenge, because every single one of them said they won 900 features. But after we got through that problem, you know, I think that maybe two of them from the Massachusetts book really stand out. And the reason that they stand out is that they were friends, and they were so completely different. And those two would be Mario Fats Caruso, known as the Shrewsbury Flash, and on the other hand, Wild Bill Slater, who was the Connecticut Valley Rocket.
Awesome drivers.
And both of those guys were, of course, very, very strong up here in early NASCAR racing in New England in the very, very early 60s. And they were the big top dogs at Norwood Arena and had some unbelievable dukeouts on the track. And as I said, they were friends, but they just were completely different. Fats was just a real hard-driving, hard-partying guy who absolutely took no prisoners. He didn't care what he looked like. He didn't care what he said. All he wanted to do was win, and boy, could he ever drive a race car. One time when I was first starting to race, I did some press releases for Westboro Speedway to try to get money for my little B car. And one day I talked the editor of the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, who was a very proper kind of guy, to come down to the track and do some interviews. And he'd never been before, so he came down and met the promoter and met me, and I said, well, what would you like? And he said, well, I understand there's a driver here named Mr. Caruso. I'd like to talk to him. So I went in the pits and found Fats, and Fats said, sure, I'll talk to him. Meet me in 5 minutes at the beer stand. Well, right there, I should have known I was in trouble. But anyway, I brought the sports editor over to the beer stand, and there was Fats, and I introduced them. And the first question the sports editor said is, well, Mr. Caruso, just why is it that they call you Fats? And Fats says, that's because I got big, you know what. I thought, oh, my God, we're off to a great start. But I think you can get the picture about Fats. And down at Norwood, he was really something. He'd burn that right rear tire after that Worcester sand and gravel car every night. Now, just on the other end of the spectrum was Bill Slater. And he had that V8 car out of Connecticut, which was black and yellow and just so pretty and well-maintained. Mm-hmm. And Slater always had his pressed black pants on and his pressed white shirt.
Every hair in place.
Pardon me?
Every hair in place.
Oh, totally. Very much the ladies' man. never touched a beer, never talked impolitely, always the gentleman, and on the track, super smooth and clean, and the two of them would just go at it and make the fans just rock and sock. And from my view, if you add the two of those together, you get racing in the 50s and 60s.
Well, in reading the books and talking to Bugsy, can you hear me okay, Lou?
Sure, I can now, yeah.
Bugsy and Leo Cleary were probably two of the worst pranksters that ever went on a racetrack. They made it so much fun. Today, they would have both been banned from racing, I think.
Oh, there's no question. And my condolences, Carol, that you had to talk to Bugsy. I mean, nothing's changed. He's just as out of control as he always was.
He's hysterical. And also, thanks to you, I got to talk to Pete Hamilton this week, which was really another great thrill.
Oh, yeah. He was extraordinary. And, of course, just really won everybody's heart in New England when he went down and won that Daytona 500 right after Don McTavish had been killed down there. And it was just an incredible thing. And the only thing that was sad about Pete Hamilton was that his career was so short. He was and is, as you know, Carol, a complete gentleman, a real good guy. His dad was a dean of Northeastern University here in Boston. But I'll tell you, he was no Bugsy. Bugsy was the prankster.
I was reading through the book real quick trying to get some points to bring across here, and who was it that welded the bumper to his car, would put the name of the driver he was going to get even with, welded it to the bumper of his car?
That would be none other than the Lion, Leo Cleary.
Leo, that's who I thought it was.
Yeah, that would have to be the Lion. And give him a call sometime, Carol, because he hasn't changed either. He's in his mid-70s, but it's in great shape. And every time I see him, he's just shaking his head saying, I can't understand why nobody gives me a ride. I'm faster than most.
You know, it's funny because when I left Norwood Arena, I was a young lady in my 20s. And it seems like when you leave a place or if you, you know, the last time you saw somebody, they were 5 years old, you still expect them to be 5 years old. And I'm on the phone, and all of a sudden, an older man gets on, and you're like, wow, where did all these years go? And
yeah,
all the changes are unbelievable.
It is unbelievable that, you know, the sport of short track racing really is getting mature. It's been around for a long time, and one of the thrills of doing these books is that a lot of the people I've talked about have, you know, the racing was so long ago for them that they've sort of forgotten about that part of their lives. And when you call them up and talk to them about it, at first they can almost be a little bit distrustful about what you're about. But once they get going, and the memories begin sparking each other, they just get so into it. And the thing that's sort of cool, I think, that in a way these books sort of validate what they did and what we were all so interested in when we were growing up, is I'll tell you one thing you can take to the bank. They'll never be the kind of racing again that we saw.
Never.
Oh, no.
Never.
No.
When I was going to Norwood at the time, women were not allowed in the pits, so we used to have big tailgate parties after the races, and I got to meet a lot of those guys then. Of course, we don't remember each other now. It's been 35, 40 years.
Yeah.
But when you hear their name, it still gives you the goosebumps, and talking to Bugsy this week was unbelievable fun. I could have talked to him for hours and hours. I have other friends down here that know Joe Callan is a friend of mine, and John Birdie, and both of them have a vast knowledge of everything that, you know, went on up there.
They sure do.
So this show is really, really going to be a lot of fun for people like that. And, of course, old Bill here, he's quivering wanting to talk to you again. So I'm going to turn it over to him for a second.
Sure.
You know, Lou, we were talking about the first race I ever went to. I was sitting on the fence in Wilmington downtown, and this truck stopped and had a race car on the back. And I said to the guy, hey, can I ride to the racetrack? And he said, yeah, get up there and get in that car, but don't touch anything. And it was Andy Cody with the 444.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I was 13 years old. It's hard to believe it's been 25 years already, at least. But anyway, Ace LeClaire was driving the car for him. And we went to Medford Bowl. And as you drive in, Pearl Bailey was singing. And then I started going with Joe Cast. And then I started going with Parky Parkhurst. And I would steer Parky's car. They'd tow it with a rope from Wilmington to Medford Bowl. And I'd be in the car. And, I mean, it was a blast. And I look at these guys today. They got more money in tires and wheels than we had in the whole rig, including what we were towing with. And you blow a motor and go to Honest Ed Bowley and, Ed, I need a flathead. Well, I think that one had oil pressure. Try that one. $5, get an engine. You know, we had a lot of fun, though, Lou. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I sure do. And that Andy Cody, my God, what a guy he was.
Yes, he was.
Always just a little bit ahead of the sheriff, thank goodness.
And, yes.
Some of the things that he did, for example, right now it would have been a little bit after the time that you were going to Medford Bowl with the tow rope.
Yeah.
But when those cars began to go from full coupes down to the cutdowns,
right.
As you know, they began to really fool around with the motors.
Right.
And so they started to have technical inspections and things like that.
Yeah.
And in most of the divisions, they wouldn't let you bore them out.
So right.
What Andy Cody did was to bore out half of his motor
right.
and leave the other half stock. And then he mounted the steering box next to the head
right.
of the big side.
Right.
So you had to take the motor out to get the head off.
Yeah.
So that meant that you had to take the head off on the other side when you were checking the motor.
Right.
The side was legal.
You know, he was funny because I started going there, and then, of course, then Parky Parkinson lived up the street from me in Wilmington. So I was always around racing Forrest Dame's garage. And then when I see Dickie Kale and I see Mike Murphy worked with me on the car when I started. And, I mean, all this Joe Edwards and Al Edwards and all these names in the book, I mean, it's unreal. You know, it's just, I raced for 9 years and never did anything fancy, so I wasn't one of the big names, but I raced. And,
and you know, you raced right at a key time, because in the early 60s then, that cut-down racing at Hudson and Pines was just beyond spectacular.
Right. And I was telling Carol, the first time I went to Westboro, I was a 17-year-old kid in an old Ford coupe. And I'm going down the backstretch, and this thing's making all kinds of noise, and it's like I'm going 300 miles an hour. And two guys went by me, Ollie and McLaren, one on each side, and I thought the world came to an end.
Yeah. Well, it probably did when they got to the third turn.
Yeah. But, you know, the good part about it, Red and Ollie, every time I got up there, I'd go and have lunch with them and talk with them. And Red came down to visit me a couple of times. And I did have a chance to pray with Ollie and lead Ollie to the Lord before he died. You know, and that was a big thing. That was, you know, I kept telling him, Ollie, I need to meet you in heaven, brother, and here's what you got to do. And he said, well, let me pray. And that was a big thing. But I love those guys. And Bentley Warren and some of the others, I mean, the stories just go on and on. But
yeah,
when I come up there in October, I'm coming by to see you. We'll talk.
Well, please do. And something that you've got to put on your agenda is that Bentley, who's just as naughty as he always was,
nuts.
Has a brand new business up in Arundel, Maine called Bentley's Saloon. And I think, given your new occupation, you better go up there and
pray for him.
Straightened out.
No,
you can pray for him.
I know you can do it. Yeah.
Let me ask you one more thing. How's Russ doing?
Russ Conway?
Yeah.
He's doing much better. As you probably know, he went through a patch of bad road and had some cardiac trouble.
Right.
But he had very, very good mechanics and
Beautiful.
He's doing much better now.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to say that he's going again on the Ollie Silva book.
Good. You know, there's a friend of mine down here. He heard me talk about Ollie so much. He has an antique race car. He had it painted black and put a zero on it and put in memory of Ollie Silver for my birthday. And he races it in the antique thing. When he was at Zephyr Hills,
cool.
Lee Allard was down here, and Lee saw it. And that's a whole other story. Russ will tell you about that. Anyway, Lou, it's good to talk to you.
You know, when you come up, if you can, keep in mind that I believe it's either the first or second Saturday in October of every year now, there's a Pines reunion at the original site.
Wow.
And Ollie's Super Modified has been restored and goes there. The little square top coupe has been restored and it goes there. Somebody's putting the old Pinto together.
Oh, wow.
And this Pines reunion is really quite amazing because, as you know, as you guys probably know, it closed in 1973, but every year that reunion outdraws any racetrack in New England.
Hey, Lou, I hate to butt in here, but you can stay on the line. We've got to take a break, and when we come back, I want to put out, folks, if you want to talk to these guys, you can do so. You call us at 941-228-8359. We're not doing it on the message board. You got to call on the telephone, 941-228-8359. You have some questions for these fine fellows about how racing was started back in the 50s and 60s and how it ran there in Massachusetts or whatever. When we come back from break, I'm going to talk about a wild and crazy flag man named Kenny Small.
Oh.
We got to go to break.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Good work.
Race fans, Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drotty, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power Batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power Batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power Batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion, to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, short track asphalt, short track dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
G
Cherokee. Yay. Yeah, we're coming back. Here we come.
We have two guests on the line now.
Hello, I'm Frank Bartles.
Shut that down. And we got both guests on the line now, guys, if you want it.
We're back with Inside Florida Racing, and we've got actually another one of the, I don't want to call them old-time racers.
Pioneers.
Bill Wimble, he's on the line with us. Bill, can you hear me?
Yeah, just barely, but I can't hear you.
Well, I'm going to try to speak up louder for you. We're having a great show here, man. We got Lou on here. We got Reverend Bill. He was a reverend now here. And now we've got Bill Wimble on the line. And, Bill, you've got substantial here. You were racing in the early 60s and looked like you were doing pretty well in what NASCAR and the Sportsman Series then. And let's see, NASCAR New York State champion. Man, you've got all kinds of track championships. Bill, talk a little bit.
Well, I certainly had an awfully good time during the 60s. From 1960 to 1968, it was my time to shine, I guess. And we did win a lot of championships, a couple of national championships, and five New York State championships, a couple Connecticut State championships, and 14 track championships altogether during that period, except for one. My first one was in 55 at Plattsburgh, New York. Didn't get another one until 1960, but from there on in, they came fast and furious.
There's no doubt there. How old were you there, let's say, in 1960?
Well, I was born in 32, so I guess I was 28.
28 years old, and what kind of struggle did you have to get to that, let's say even to the 1955 when you were run that track championship? What kind of struggle did you have to get in that race car and get it to the racetrack and all?
Well, the struggle I had in the very beginning back in 1951 was probably about as much struggle as anybody ever had. I had no money. I had not much mechanical capability, but I did have a desire. And what we took to the racetrack the first time was as close to junk as you could possibly imagine. And I was pretty proud of it, to tell you the truth. We towed this car to the racetrack with a log chain. Somebody steering the stock car.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Big football helmet and just the same clothes that I wore to the barn. I was a farmer back then. So it was a pretty humble start, and it stayed that way for a bit. And little by little, we gained and gained and gained. And as I said, when we got to 1960, I really had come into my own at that point. And it was pretty nice from there on in, until the final race, in which I fractured my skull pretty seriously. And that turned out to be the end of my career.
Tell the folks about that. You know, here's the deal. You got a lot of folks that are listening to you right now that are like myself, and we can't even appreciate what you're talking about because of all the how cars have gone today and the safety that's gone into them. Explain to folks a little bit about the car you had at the time and how an accident like that came about.
Well, the accident came about in the type of accident that all race drivers hope won't happen to them. I was passing. I don't remember this, frankly. So all I can do is relate to you what occurred. And I was passing the leader at Lebanon Valley Speedway for the lead in the second turn on the outside. And as it's related to me, we both hit oil and we both spun. And I just so happened to end up crossways of the groove with my door exposed to the oncoming herd. Two cars approached me side by side, and they split and went one on each end of me, and the next car didn't know I was there, and he got me dead center in the door at high speed. So that's how that occurred. And the car itself was really well built in for those days. The door bars were strong. The door bars actually held, bent them pretty bad, but they held. And therefore, the car's bumper hitting me didn't get in the cockpit with me. But apparently, since the only thing that was there that my head could have hit was the roll bar, which was padded, and I had a good helmet at that point. I had a Bell Magnum, which was a good helmet in those days at that time. And it did fracture my skull through it all. And I had only recently did I realize that had the roll bar not been there, it might well have snapped my neck and I'd have been dead instead of alive. So you see, there's a silver lining to almost everything.
Absolutely. Well, that's very interesting. From 1967, when you were in New York at the New York State Sportsman Champion in 67, did you say that you raced? Yeah, you raced in 68 at Lebanon Valley Speedway and won the track championship there. What year did you say that was that you stopped racing?
In 1968.
In 68. So,
yeah.
So when you stepped back, did you become a car owner or a teacher or anything that, to keep racing going around where you were at?
As a matter of fact, I did something. I became an inspector and then the chief steward at Utica Rome Speedway. And I did that for 7 years. And to be honest with you, I don't know that I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
But I did it for a very, very close friend of mine who owned the Speedway and who is still today a very close friend. And I'm glad I did it. But it wasn't the type of thing that I would have preferred to do.
Well, Lou, are you still on the line with us?
I am, yes.
Well, we've got Bill and Lou there, and you guys know each other? Do you fellas know each other?
We sure do. In fact, I would say we're pretty good friends, and I'm actually working on a book about Bill with Bill, and so I know quite a bit about him. And if you'll allow me just to carry on for a little paragraph about my friend, I'd like to do that because I think he's being a little bit modest.
You think?
Yeah, go ahead, certainly.
Bill came out from his dairy farm in Lisbon, New York, to places like Stafford Springs in Connecticut, the track you guys will remember. He was just absolutely extraordinary and captured all of us kids of my generation, you know, the Dick Bergren age, and all of us just so hero-worshipped Bill Wimble. And he was very much a stylist of his own, very clean driver, well-maintained cars, nice to the fans and everything. But the thing that really, really is especially extraordinary about Bill's career relates to what he said right in his first sentence, that he really had the desire, and he did. Now, look at a map sometime and see where Lisbon, New York is. It's way up on the St. Lawrence Seaway. And it seemed to me that to race at any kind of NASCAR track to gain those points, Bill had to travel about 300 miles. And so he literally was racing 4 or 5 times a week and maintaining a dairy farm at the same time. And put this in perspective now. This was not the days of these huge haulers and planes and motorhomes with hot tubs and dancing girls. This was a very different kind of deal. No highways to speak of. The national highway system was just beginning, and it was an extraordinary amount of work, an extraordinary effort, and something just brilliantly accomplished.
Well, I tell you,
I interject that Lou is making me sound awfully good.
Well, you guys, it's good for you guys to bring each other up every now and then.
he tends to see me through rose-colored glasses, I think, but I certainly appreciate it. I appreciate his thoughtfulness in bringing it to your attention. But, you know, Lou, you know, I'm just old Bill.
Well, you know what? We're all just a bunch of old fuddy duds, but I'll tell you what.
Speak for yourself.
This is, well, except for Mr. Bonehead here, we're a bunch of old fuddy duds that are just enjoying the heck out of this interview.
The Reverend is only like 32 years old, according to his math that he did earlier.
I'd hate to hang that long.
Now, I'm going to talk about somebody that I said we were going to talk about before we went on break. Again, I want to tell you folks out there, if you're listening, 941-228-8359, you want to get in here and talk to either of the Bills or Lou, I want to talk about Kenny Small, okay? A flagger, a flagman. but not your average ordinary flagman. For all you folks out there that are used to watching today, they didn't used to flag these things from, you know, a tower that was 20 feet in the air. Lou, why don't you talk about Kenny Small? I wanted to say this. The reason why Lou can talk about you guys so well is because he's a great writer. If you read his books, I'm telling you, it puts you right there. You really understand where you're at. Where can we get one of these books from? Let me give the address.
Well, probably the easiest thing would be just to give us a call. My little publishing company is called Coastal, C-O-A-S-T-A-L, and then the number 181. And we have a toll-free line. It's 877-907-8181. That's 877-907-8181. Just give us a ring. We'll send you a catalog. We got all kinds of old-time racing books. And I can speak to the issue of Kenny Small, who was a great starter in the New England area. You might not know that name, Bill Wimble, but you will know this guy when I tell you that he taught John Tolini how to flag.
Okay.
And Kenny Small flagged about 10,000 races in his career. He was a truck driver from Lowell, Massachusetts, but every weekend he was off flagging for Oscar Ridland or the New England Super Modified Association or whatever. Extremely colorful kind of guy who, like the legendary dirt track flagman Tex Enright, he always flagged from the surface of the track, refused to go up on the flag stand, and the consequence was that it was always a very entertaining part of the show, but the other consequence is that sometimes when you do that kind of thing, you've got to pay the fiddler. And Kenny paid the fiddler on multiple times. I was there for it one night, and he was just hit by a car and thrown up in the air like a rag doll. It was just one of those sickening kind of things. But he was back a couple of months later with the sticks flying in the air again. Just really an extraordinary guy and a real command of the field. He would make a point of tapping every car with his flag as the cars went by on the parade lap. And what it was a subtle way of making connection between the starter and every single driver in the field. He was really cool.
Yeah. Hey, Lou, do you remember the guy that was before him at Medford Bowl, Walt Faulkner?
You're aging yourself, 32-year-old Bill. did you hear him, Lou? Did you hear him?
No, I missed that. My reception's really faint here.
Okay. Do you remember Walt Faulkner, who had been the starter at the Medford Bowl? He started the same way that Kenny did, out on the track.
Well, Wally Faulkner was a man for all seasons.
Right.
He did everything. At places like Newmarket, New Hampshire, which was an old big car track, he was not only the flagger, but he also did the concession stand. And if you asked him quite sweetly, you could get some lemonade that had a real kick in it, if you know what I mean. Now, one time, the times that the promoter couldn't even afford or didn't want to bother with paying to have a doctor, Wally Faulkner became Dr. Faulkner. And so he was quite the guy. And he ended up, along with someone named Bill Welch and another guy named Jimmy Costello, starting Atlantic Auto Racing Association. And they kept Westboro and Brookline going for years, and they were the ones who started the famous World Series of Racing, which is the biggest racing weekend still every year at the conclusion of the year at Thompson Speedway.
Wow.
Well, let,
It's incredible.
Let me get back to Bill Wimble there. Bill, you there?
I am. I'm here.
Are you enjoying the show?
Oh, absolutely.
I am, too. I love this show. It's really great. Tell the folks about NEAR, N-E-A-R.
Okay. I'm probably not as qualified to speak of NEAR as Lou is, but NEAR is the New England, either New England Antique Racers or New England Auto Racers, depending on which day it is. And, I've been fortunate enough to have been inducted into their Hall of Fame by no less than the man you're speaking with, Lou Boyd.
Oh,
who
well.
Does such a wonderful job when he does things like that. And as usual, he makes me sound better than I am. But in any event, it's a wonderful organization. It is very dear to my heart for whatever reason. I enjoy that annual induction banquet in late January more than any other racing event I think that I attend. And that it's because it is so well done, so well thought out and planned, and a beautiful setting. It's just amazing to me that they have put together something like that, and I wish that all of the organizations that did the same thing did it as well as NEAR does. I'm pretty much in awe of their staff, their president, their staff, and how well they do. Have I answered your question?
Certainly, and you've been inducted in that. What year did you get inducted into there?
I believe it was 2002, I think.
Very nice, very nice. Bill, what would you tell? Well, you know, you can't tell any of these young drivers anything.
probably not. What
would you tell to somebody, I guess, that was, you know, what I realized from you guys is in some of these days, you know, the age that you guys started was not as it is today, obviously. When you were 15, you were looking at that car drive by and hoping that you could get in it. And today, you know, 12-year-olds that are in the cars racing them. If you could, give some of the folks out here who maybe are 20 years old or 22, 23, 24 years old, thinking about wanting to get started in racing, give them a little boost, give them a little talk about what they need to keep their eye on.
Boy, that's a bit of a toughie, depending on what part of the United States we're talking about. But any short track that has a beginner's division is a good place to begin. Such a thing didn't exist when I began, and I was exposed immediately to much, much better cars than I had myself. And so I stumbled along in a pretty blind fashion for quite some time. A young driver today is, number one, the youngsters are looked at far more closely than they used to be and given far more credit for the probable talent that some of them have than was the case back in my day. But starting a beginner's position and learn and just learn and ask questions and talk to your betters, talk to the officials, ask questions, and whenever you're ready, you go on to the next division and you use the same formula, and when you're ready, you go on to the next one. I don't think it makes a lot of sense to skip too many of the steps up, although a talented youngster can do that. He can skip steps. You know, a few people come to mind that have that capability, but mostly that's not the case. So that's the advice I would give to 20, 22, 23-year-olds who really want to get into the sport. Get at it. Go do it. And start somewhere near the beginning and learn everything you can learn as you go along. And just ask questions all the time of your competitors, those who have been at it longer, officials, anybody that's involved with racing, has been involved with racing for a long time, has got some good advice to give.
You think you could have done it at 15?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I could drive a car very, very well when I was 15. And,
yeah.
And unfortunately, I was doing so illegally. But I did.
That's a whole nother show for you guys to talk about all the illegal driving that you were doing when you were probably 13 years old, if
yes,
you could get behind it.
Matter of fact, in my case, yes, 13 and before.
Well, that would be Bill Wimble. I never did anything like that.
Oh, no.
There's another name on the prayer list.
Yeah. Say a prayer for him, Reverend. Tell me, Bill, what was a sportsman car then in the 60s?
Well, a sportsman car was a NASCAR division car that allowed you to take, say, an old 36 or 37 coupe, and using usually a Ford flathead V8, there were various things that you were allowed to do to soup it up. You were, of course, expected to have a locked rear end and to have the ability to have a lower gear than the standard gear in the car. And they were reasonably powerful cars for their age and for the circumstances in which we ran in those days. They were a lesser car than a NASCAR modified, but believe it or not, I beat an awful lot of modifieds with my sportsman car for years and years and years. Just depended on how good the engine was and how good the mechanic was, and to some degree how good the driver was.
When did the Franklin rear end come into play in these cars?
I became aware of the Franklin rear ends somewhere probably around the beginning of 1955, and the reason I happen to remember that is I went to work for a car owned by Gaylord Rao of Rao Brothers Ford Sales in Ellenburg Depot, New York, and he was in love with Franklin rear ends, and I had never heard of them. I knew about, what is it, Hollabrand? That's not right. I can't think of the name there.
There was a Highland rear early on.
Well, I still haven't got it right. Doesn't matter. But Gaylord Rao had discovered these Franklin rear ends, and he was in love with them, and he insisted that we have one, and he did. He used to work with Jimmy Franklin. He went to Florida. Gaylord Rao went to Florida every winter, and he would go to the Franklin shops there and keep himself updated and keep himself equipped with Franklin rear ends.
Yeah, I've talked to Jamie Franklin in my years of racing, you know, because I'm from Florida. I was from the Tampa area and actually got a chance to go over there and see him over his shop, and I was just telling Carol, that's a guy we need to have on the show, because he has some outrageous stories of the Franklin rear end and how it got integrated for a little while into a NASCAR, and the good old boys sent him down the road with his good idea. But it's amazing what that rear end has done for local racing over the years, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a strong one. And that was what impressed Gaylord, my owner of the time, at the time. It's a very strong rear end and very not susceptible to braking, which was what we were used to with another kind of a quick change rear end that most people were using until the Franklin came along.
Do you remember Bobby Santos?
Oh, very well.
I went to I saw his name on the roster, and I did a little checking around, and little did I know that he is the grandson of the late, great Bobby Santos that we used to watch at Norwood Arena. And that night I was just so lucky because I not only got to meet him, but Bobby's son. That was pretty exciting for me.
Oh, sure. Bobby the Third, who is one of those people who I mentioned earlier, can jump from one grade to another and miss half the grades on the way up. He's got that much talent. He's a super talented youngster, and he's headed for great things. There's no question about that. Erica, his sister, has recently won the only NEMA midget feature that any female has ever won. And she, they say, is almost as good as Bobby the Third.
That's what I've heard.
Now, the grandfather, who ran back in the time when I was chief steward at Utica Rome, and I ran with him some before I stopped driving. But I was one night I was chief steward at Utica Rome, and there was a very tough call to make. Bugsy Stevens was involved in that call, and Bobby Santos was involved in that call.
Whoops.
And the call went in favor of Bugsy. And I had been pretty clear at the pit meeting over the microphone in front of the audience as to how a certain type of event would be handled, and that event came up. And Bugsy was the recipient of the good call, and Bobby was the recipient of the bad. And I hope he's still not mad at me, but I think he might be. There certainly was an awful lot of hullabaloo that night. I can promise you.
Did you guys know we got Bugsy on the show later on tonight?
Well, I know he's. I didn't know if he'd been on or whether he was coming, but yes, I knew that.
Yeah, he's going to be on the show a little bit later. I wanted to say, ask one thing that either one of you guys can answer. Did there used to be a dress code at the races? Because I noticed in these books, when you look at the fans, the fans had a lot better dress code than the rednecks I'm used to seeing.
Lou, you answer that.
Well, I can answer it for New England, and it is the fact that particularly at some tracks, such as Riverside Park and Norwood Arena, which were a little bit more toney than some of the outlying tracks, like such as the Pines, people actually did dress up to go to the races in the old days, and you see high heel shoes, you see coats and ties and that sort of thing in the fans, particularly in the early 50s. But as time went by the 60s, it did become a little bit more of the people's sport, and it wasn't quite as, shall we say, pretentious as it was in the beginning. I can't really speak to what it was like in New York.
Well, I can only speak to what it was like for Bill. And as I mentioned before, I went to the races in my the same clothes that I wore to the barn to do chores with, and and that, of course, I was clean. They were clean clothes. They certainly were that, but they were not pretentious at all. And that was my driving uniform for a long time. Before driving uniforms came along, we didn't know that there was such a thing to be even thought of in the future. And thankfully, of course, it was thought of, and of course, you know where it's come from there, to the point where the drivers are actually really protected from fire. Whereas in the early days, a driving uniform, which was a fire suit, had maybe 5 to 10 seconds worth of protection for you. And today, I think that's up to probably pretty close to a minute. And you can't do too much in 5 or 10 seconds, but you can do a lot in a minute.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's wonderful what's happened as far as safety's concerned.
Yes, I think that's what's taken the sport to where it's at today, because with speeds as fast as they've gone, if the safety had not have picked up with it, there'd be way more dead race car drivers out there than what we have
today. Very much so, yeah.
You know, today we've talked about it when people have these accidents and they get out. Everybody starts talking about, oh, the racetrack should have done this or that. I'm always the guy, because I do race cars, and I say, you know what, it's not the track's fault. We come out here and race. We put our lives on the line. We know it. So people should be happy when they survive these crashes of today.
You bet.
Yeah, we didn't have anything.
It's so litigious today that the last thing we need is more people getting hurt.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I just went right from the gas station to the track. I mean, I wore what I was wearing all day at the gas station, soaked with gas and oil and grease and everything else, and you went and drove the car, and that was it.
Did you ever see Freddie Schultz when he went to a race?
That's a whole other program.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we're going to have to take a quick break here. No?
Yeah.
Yes.
Time to take a break. Folks, you're listening to Inside Florida Racing, and you've got your nostalgic show here today with the two Bills and Lou.
And I personally want to thank you both so very much for tonight. I'd love to do this again sometime in the future. Maybe we can get Leo and Pete and some of those guys on. But for tonight, thank you so, so much. This was really enjoyable.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. And certainly, I know Lou feels the same way.
Are you guys got this tuned in on your computer at home where you can listen to this once we get off the air with you?
Unfortunately for me, I do not have. Mike, when we just got back from a long trip.
Well, that's too bad, because I'd like for you to listen to the rest.
I'll tape it, and I'll send you a CD.
There you go.
If you would, Carol, please do so. But believe me, I'll be tuned in next Monday.
Beautiful.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so, so much.
Good listening to you and good talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. See you guys later. All right, folks. There you have it. Bill Wimble, Lou Boyd. Fabulous stories that these guys could just sit around and tell. And for somebody that likes to talk like me, I'd love to sit around and talk for hours.
You'd have to do it for days, because these guys got stories that could go on until you're an old man.
Yeah, well, that's not too far for me.
Lou,
all right, folks.
I'll be in touch, bud. And God bless. And tell everybody up there, hi, I'll see you in October.
They're already gone. You don't have to yell. But they'll hear it on the recording. It was great that you guys called in. Folks, we got to take a break. You're listening to Inside Florida Racing. We'll be right back. We're going to have Bug Stevens on.
The presentation.
Go ahead. Hit it, Jack. Hit it, Jack. You're listening to Inside Florida Racing.
Race fans! Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Darrell Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drotty, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
Power Masters, your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power Batteries. Power Masters pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power Batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power Batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. Power Master also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
Yo. All right. Inside Florida Racing. Listen to a great show here. You got Rob Elting here, Carol Wicks, Reverend Bill in the studio. Jack is in here from Inside Florida Racing. Who do we have on the line? Bugsy's on the line with us?
Bugsy Stevens.
So.
Bugsy, is that you? Are you there?
Let me pinch myself. I think it's me.
I love it.
Oh, this is going to be fun. I feel it coming. Thank you, Bugsy, for coming on. We're going to have some fun with you.
I still, I'm just getting out of the cow manure, so I'm right now.
Man, you've been dealing with cow manure for years, according to this book here. That's where you came from.
I am. I'm at the farm right now.
Yeah. So,
Just get through milk and a chicken.
Yeah, you don't get much out of that, do you?
Well, it's kind of tough.
Bugsy, you still selling them rooster eggs?
Well, yeah, the babies are tough, too.
Well, I've been reading some of your antics, and let me tell you something. If you were racing now, I think you'd be spending a lot of time in the bleachers.
In the red trailer.
In the red trailer.
I used to spend a lot of time under the bleachers.
We got a lot of people listening in who know you from years gone by. Chaplain Bill Ross here. Say hi, Bill. Say hi to Bugs.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Bugs.
What's going on?
Not much. I missed you up at New Smyrna the last time you were supposed to show up, and I guess you didn't feel very well or something. The guys told me you were coming, and then they said, well, Bugs, you didn't feel good, so I'll catch you next time. But it's good talking to you, man.
Getting over about a cancer.
Oh, yeah, right. That's what they said.
And I'm bouncing back now. I'm eating these cow pills.
Yeah, good.
What kind of pills he eating?
Cow pills. He's eating cow pills.
These little round balls that come out of a cow. I don't know what they are, but...
Eat them slow, Bugsy.
Yeah, try one of...
I've been tripping like the devil.
Hey, Bugsy, why don't you try one of them wormers? Shove one of them worm pills down your throat.
I had these little round pills my mother gave me for 20 years. I ate them round things. One day, my sister said, these things taste like crap. She says, You don't need him. I think you're getting smarter. They were goat turds.
Goat turds.
You're getting smarter already.
So this is the guy that Carol's been talking about that was a prankster. I can't imagine Bug Stevens pulling any pranks on anybody. Now, I'm going to talk about I'm going to talk about the biggest prank that you pulled in your racing career, okay? And that is how you got your name Bug Stevens. That's not even your name. You're out here with what do you call that?
Fictitious name.
Yeah, fictitious name. I want you to tell all the folks out there the true story behind why you're not Carl and you're Bug.
Oh, that came when I was a kid riding a motorcycle.
No, that's not it.
Yeah, up in Massachusetts here, we had an insane asylum, and we used to call it the Bug House, and that's where they thought I belonged.
Yeah, well, that's where you got the first name.
That, can you?
Yeah, that's where you got the first name. What I read in your book, and I find it really interesting, you know, is that being that you went into the Air Force, it kind of put a little hiatus on your racing a little bit. But
yeah,
the Air Force, they didn't like it when they heard that you were racing back then, did they?
Well, we had a world champion baseball team, and we traveled a lot. And I got racing, and I started doing good. And on the weekend, I'd get sick, and then found out in a newspaper that I was winning races, and they didn't like it. They called me, and they wanted to demote me.
Well, it's because you weren't there to be the star pitcher. You got to get it all out there. They needed you to win the games, and you were out racing cars.
Yeah, absolutely right.
So you changed your name to Bug Stevens.
Yeah, my buddy's name is Dave Stevens. He was racing with me down in Florida. I mean, down in Texas, too.
Right.
So I took his middle name and his last name. Middle name is Steven, too. So it worked out good.
And it stuck all that time. You know, it's funny how do you actually collect a check for Bug Stevens at the racetrack?
How do I do what?
How did you ever collect your check at the racetrack? How could you cash a check made out to Bug Stevens?
I send any check you want. You send me one.
Oh, man, this is great.
That's my Bugsy right there.
So, Bugsy, you know that Bill in here with us now, he's a reverend now. He can save you from, you know, some of these problems that you have.
I've been saved. I've saved every day.
Well, let's talk about some of these cars that you were racing. And looking through here, it looks like you guys would build a modified about out of anything, whether it's a Pinto or a station wagon.
Yeah, that Volkswagen, rear-engine Volkswagen are the best thing I ever drove.
Really?
Had a lot of good modified.
You picked the number 3 there. I guess you were in the 3 before the Intimidator ever had it.
I drove the guy that had that. We started that together in 1964 when I went with him. And we had a lot of success with that.
So you made it into NASCAR.
Excuse me?
You made it into NASCAR.
Yeah, we started in 65.
Tell us about your NASCAR racing a little bit.
66, we won a national championship. No, we didn't. We didn't win until 67. We didn't even chase points until 67. 67, 8, and 9, we went after the points and we won it. And it cost a lot of money to run points, and we were operating out of one car garage. So we won 3 championships, and then Lenny's wife, who really was the boss, she got cancer and she died, and I dressed him up too much down Daytona, and his work habits fell off a little bit that year. And being on top, I was offered some good rides, so we were gonna NASCAR had a deal for us, and we were gonna run Grand National then. And we had a Superbird we went down to work on, and that deal flopped out. We finished 6th in the World 600 the first race, but they showed up three races in a row, 2 days late for practice and everything else. And I said, I'm out of here. I'm going back to New England where we can race 3 or 4 nights a week and have fun. And that was the end of that. So I've been racing ever since. I've been with three or four different guys. I've been with Joe Brady, Tony Costello, and I. We had a long relationship, 10 years probably. And then I just went Bob Garbarino. Downey Lee is driving his car now. So that was the end of it. After my second broken back, it kind of took the starch out of me. Then when Richie and we had four guys get killed right in front of me that last year, I drove the modified. I think I had subconscious mind factor with my brain. I thought I was driving just as hard as I was, but everybody said, you're not going like you used to it.
All right.
I said, time to retire. Go to the stud farm.
So is that what you've been doing ever since, breeding?
I've been breeding.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, so what was it like to take an old dirt car and take it out there in the Permatex 300 back in 1970?
Oh, that was unbelievable. That was a Cotton Owens car. That's that 10-cent millionaire I got hooked up with in Daytona. Right. First time I went out to warm up, there was more dirt blowing around. You'd think you were sweeping the track. Oh, it's a 426 Hemi, a 3-speed standard, and what a piece of junk. But I was excited to get in it, so I did it. It didn't qualify at something. I forgot what happened, but I was happy to get out of it, to tell you.
You know what Richard said, didn't he? Old Richard Brown that owned it, he said that crazy Yankee will get in it and drive it.
Yeah, he did. Me too.
Wasn't there an episode somewhere along the line that had to do with firecrackers?
Not me.
Tell us about it. It was kind of, I thought it was hysterical.
Well, it was interesting. If you're getting your car, a couple of my friends, small firecrackers, nothing serious. But if you're nervous, and I knew it, but you are sitting in your seat, ready to go out, while there's a cop in the seat. Boom! Warmed your jowls up a little bit.
I'm telling you.
So, it looks like that, you really like the modifieds better than anything, and your buddies there that tried to fund your NASCAR deal just it never seemed to pan out. So if there's one thing that is still consistent today that was back then, it's hard to get that money to go racing, ain't it?
Yeah, I was down at Mike Stefanik's last week or a couple weeks ago, and I was chatting with a few of the guys, and Todd Zegedy from New York and somebody else, they had just been down with Jack Roush, and they all passed the flying colors, the test. He says, well, you can come back and get a ride in a Busch car if you bring a sponsor for $2.5 million. So that's how you get started. If you got a rich daddy, you can go down there.
I understand that you still go to a lot of races down here in Florida, particularly over there at New Smyrna and around here.
If I don't have to pay.
We'll see what we can do about that.
Hey, Bugs, how good of friends were you with Ron Burchard?
We're still good friends.
Still good friends. Now, you know his brother, Big Ray?
His what?
He's got an older brother named Ray. You know Ray?
No, I don't know Ray.
It's one of my guys I went to high school with. His stepfather is Ray Burchard, which is his older brother. And I got to meet Ron when I was younger. And yeah. Probably about 18 years old.
Yeah.
And I remember watching him race on TV, and I got to meet him, and I was real impressed by the fact that this is a guy that races on TV, and he's right here in front of me in this guy's house. And
we got about 7 or 8 dealerships right now.
Yeah, doing well. Where are those at?
He goes from Tennessee to most of them are in Massachusetts. He's got one down in Tennessee, too.
Well, looks like you guys did a lot of racing together, and you guys are still friends. You still talk today about how racing used to be and how it is today and how you guys could all probably make it a little bit better if they'd let you run it all.
Yeah, it would be.
What do you think about NASCAR and how it's gone today? I mean, you've raced in NASCAR before. And
You want my personal opinion?
You know what? I do, because I just gave mine earlier, and Carol didn't like what I said, so let's hear what you have to say.
NASCAR was a great organization when it started. As a promoters group to get everybody together and make money. But they scalped everybody. They get a big fee now from the promoters, and they get a sponsor. They get a sponsor. Well, they always had Winston throwing them all kinds of money, but they've dealt up. But they get a sponsor and they dish out all the sponsors and stuff to all the little guys, and they grab the purse and they control everything. I mean, you can't. That's like the mafia to me.
Whoops.
And I believe that you're exactly right. You know, they've taken something that has been very, very good.
They're making a show out of racing.
Yeah.
Like Tony Stewart, who's a friend of mine.
Oh, we need to talk.
That's why they're always arguing. He's always arguing me. So this is, you know, we had a race, but I guess they shut him up a couple weeks ago, or 3 or 5 months.
Yeah, and that's...
You know, you're making millions of dollars a year. This is the way we're doing it, you know?
That's ridiculous, you know. And they don't let these guys push each other around anymore. You know, it's like... either Bill or Lou was talking earlier, probably Lou. It was a lot more colorful back then. Colorful means everything from the flagman that's running across the thing, escaping from the starting cars, to guys that actually fight on the racetrack.
Dog show, no.
Yeah, I agree, and I don't think that NASCAR cares what we think.
No, they don't give a damn what we say anyway. No. They just put their thumb on us and quash it.
Okay, well.
I mean, there was nothing to have a big fist fight in the pits or in the payoff line. I mean, we had one driver, his wife, if you did something to him during the race, you better keep your eyes open in the payoff line because she'd walk up behind you and level you, you know. I wasn't worried about him or his two brothers. It was his wife I was concerned about.
Okay, well, I'm still worried about mine, but that's all right.
Yeah.
What's your biggest thrill in your racing career? What stands out among anything that you've done?
I don't know. Everything is great.
He's a party animal.
Every time you win, it's great. I won Trenton. I won Pocono. I don't know what's good. But every time you win, it's good.
So,
I don't get excited. You know, and after I win, 15 minutes later, I'm drinking a beer and I'm saying, well, what's next? And that's the way I've always been about everything.
You know, I read in the book here about your each track had its own little party routine.
Yeah.
So for you, you love to race. You got to do that. And each race, there was also a social deal there that kept you thinking about, not only do we get to go race, but we get to do this and this afterwards, mm-hmm. or before the race, right?
Nothing was planned. Everything was a happening.
Yeah. And that's what's gone today. I'm looking at Jack, okay? And I think that Jack will agree with me. In the last 10 years, do you not agree that the actual atmosphere, say, look, for a late model race today, you go to a 100-lap late model race. You used to go on Friday night. Everyone would be there that's going to race the next day.
Yeah.
And you knew who the guy was that was going to be drunk, run around in his underwear later on. You knew which guy was going to be the ladies'
man.
Well,
these kids aren't old enough to drink.
That could be true.
It was usually a sports announcer or a writer.
Say it again?
It was usually an announcer or a writer.
You know, and that's the kind of stuff that I miss. And I bet you do, too, when you guys think back of racing, of how racing was. Because and that's the good thing about this Inside Florida Racing. We're trying to give the fans that listen what it's really like behind the scenes, and realize that you guys, even though you were out there winning races and you were Bug Stevens running around smoking cigars, you were there having a good time doing what you thought about your whole life would be fun to do, and you were doing it.
Yeah, we didn't plan it. It was a happening.
Back then, you took nothing, though, and made something out of it. You didn't go to the store and buy racing wheels and buy this and buy that. You made it.
And I was just about worn out raising hell when Richie came along, and he tricked me up for a few years. And nobody wanted to see the two of us get together, so it worked out good.
You know, Bill, isn't it like that all of life it nowadays is like that? It's all different than it used to be.
Yeah.
Because you were talking about the racing guys like a long time ago and how they were different. Well, I was sitting here thinking of like guys like football players like Bart Starr and some of them guys with the Packers. I mean, they were known for going out and they couldn't begin. If guys today do that, they end up getting kicked off the team.
Well, it's like Oakland. If you weren't a convict or somebody else, you didn't play for Oakland. I mean, that was it. But We didn't have racing wheels. You took an old Buick Roadmaster wheel and cut the middle out and hoped the guy that welded the 37 Ford Center in knew what he was doing so they didn't wobble too
well,
bad.
A 12-year-old kid now has to wear a helmet on a bicycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. You have to have a chrome plate jockstrap now to get in a car.
Talk a little bit about, if you would, I know that you and Richie Evans were very good friends, and I'm sure you miss him dearly. Being a great race car driver like he was, what was it like to be around him and the? I'm sure he was one of your prankster buddies.
We were both serious. Richie was a good racer, and he was a hell raiser like me, but I couldn't keep up with him. I was worn out by the time he came along.
Didn't take long to wear you out, Bugs. You weren't that old then, were you?
I'm 73. And Richie was probably 20 years younger than me.
Yeah.
But I'd done my time by the time Richie came along. But I stood on the gas with him for about 7 or 8, 10 years. But as you get older, you can't take it anymore, you know.
Where do you live at now? Where do you live at now, Bugs?
I live in Rehoboth, right behind Seacock Speedway.
In Massachusetts.
Yeah, about 10 miles out of Providence, Rhode Island.
So I bet you were glad to get out of the heat in Florida, weren't you?
I don't know. I like the heat.
Nah, the heat's terrible. It's really bad here right now, Bugs. It's really hot.
Everybody's up here dying with the heat, and I'm out brush cutting. So.
Milk and chickens. Yeah, we know.
Yeah.
Do you ever stay in touch with Billy or Freddie or Bobby Pendergast? I noticed on the Norwood Arena chat board.
I saw Bobby a couple weeks ago, yeah.
Oh, cool.
He's up here for summer, I think.
Doug McCarthy, you remember Doug?
Yeah.
He was just writing on the message board on the Norwood site.
Yeah. I don't see a lot of people during, you know, I'm on the go all the time.
I wish there was some way we could do some kind of a nostalgia race.
Well, there is.
Get all you guys together in a car and give you 10 laps.
No, they do that. And we were talking about it earlier. We didn't bring it up. That in Zephyr Hills, Florida, they do twice a year do car race.
I've been over there.
Well, I'd love to see maybe we can head this thing up to try to get some of you guys down.
Terrible track.
It's what?
Terrible track.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it rains all the time.
I went over there a couple of years ago. There was nothing but a mud bowl.
Yeah.
Nobody could race, really.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing that nobody really takes care of that thing. You know, it kind of sits there, and twice a year they try to use it, and it inevitably rains those things out all the time.
I tell my wife, you can't use it twice a year.
Yeah, no. You're right, and they really don't use it for anything else. It would be nice... It would be nice to see them. I did get that. It didn't go over my head.
Yeah,
I was trying to be serious. It would be nice to see you guys get together and it not rain and to have good 3 days of racing out there. So you used to race with Buzzy Rudiman, right?
Yeah. All-Star League.
All-Star League. Yeah, he's always been an all-star. All those Rudimans, they're all-stars, you know.
Yeah, we had an all-star league. We used to race Wednesdays and Thursdays.
So it wasn't uncommon for you guys to run 5 days a week back in the 60s, huh?
Oh, I ran many, many years. I ran 5 days a week.
Go ahead, Reverend. Yeah. What do you got to say?
We ran four up in New England, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And first race was at Hudson, New Hampshire on Sunday afternoon. You know,
Did you do that because you were going to get snowed out here in a couple months anyways?
We used to start racing Easter Sunday. And there's been times they plowed the track so we could race.
God.
And the water running down when the snow melted in the turns was really good. And when spring came and it thawed out, you couldn't get in the pits because there was a foot of mud. But we had fun. I mean, we really had fun, and you didn't have a lot of money invested.
Something's going on over there. You got it way up.
I didn't touch anything, but...
Jack, turn down.
You didn't have a lot of money invested, but
there we go. My mic, that was my mic you were turning up, Jack. I'm over here hearing myself breathe. Go ahead, Reverend.
No, I was just saying back then, you know, you didn't have a lot, but you had a lot of fun. But my first race, a 17-year-old kid, I thought I was a hot rodder, and they decided to start me in the middle of the second row. They're going to start Indy style. And the green flag came down, and I stepped on that old Ford, and the guy behind me run into me, and the guy on the left came up, and the guy on the right came down, and I thought, what have I got myself into now? Yeah. And, I mean, it was just, that was my first race, and it was beating and banging, and I'm thinking, man, I really don't want to wreck this guy's car. And then I finally said, well, if everybody else is going to wreck it, I might as well. So I just stuck my foot in it and left it there.
So what do you think the guys would have thought there in the 50s or 60s if they'd had a figure eight race and hooked a boat to the back of it?
I don't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Bugsy would have hooked a tractor to it.
Yeah. See, Bugsy, you didn't even think of anything crazy like that, did you?
No.
We used to go up to Alton Bay in the wintertime, plow a little track out on the ice, and bring 2 gallons of gas and 5 gallons of liquor and take the race cars up and go race on the ice.
That wasn't a bad deal.
No, that wasn't bad. And you know what? You never knew if you were cold or not.
That wasn't a bad deal. I'll tell you.
Ollie Silver and Jerry Dolliver and some of the rest. Oh, yeah. Go right up to Alton Bay.
Yeah.
See, I can't appreciate that being a native Floridian. You know, we've only had snow here a couple times, and we didn't need to bust the gasoline or liquor out to get rid of it.
Well, we'd have snow piles. I mean, they'd plow the track, you know, plow a track out, and somebody would hit you, and you'd slide sideways and into the snowbank. I mean, it would be
hard
10
as a
or
wall.
15 minutes before they found you.
Oh, you go right
in. And you didn't care because you were already drunk, so you weren't cold, so let the race go on.
See, folks,
whereabouts in Florida are you?
I'm in Lakeland.
Yeah, Bill's in Lakeland, and we are in the Northport, Ponte Gorda area is where our tower is here.
Yeah. Last time I got heard of it in Ponte Gorda.
Wow.
Yeah, what happened?
Listen to this. I was coming out. I drove a guy's car I'd never been in, and I was coming out of a pit, the first one.
All right.
And somebody came around a straightaway. They waved me out of the first car out. Guy came down and T-boned me.
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
I could see how it could happen.
Put me out for 3 days.
Mm. In Ponte Gorda?
Yeah. Right when you come off the track. Down the back straightaway, they hit him coming in turn three.
Wow.
Yeah. Hit him right in the door. You got to be careful when you come out there. It's a small area, and that's right where the cars turn down. So when's the last time you raced, Bugs?
Oh, yeah. 92.
Are you still physically able to do it?
If I could get in the car.
We all got that problem. I could get in. I don't think I'd ever get out.
We need something with the doors
180
open.
180 pounds. I'm 220 now. My two broken backs are not helping me, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure that's hindering you a little bit, and as young as you are now.
Yep.
Well, I'll be racing Saturday night.
Where are you racing?
Charlotte County.
What are you going
to
do? Oh,
racing?
It's a faster pass.
Faster, right.
Oh, now this is almost unfair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
he's a pastor with a ringer. That's why he got ordained, was so he could win
the first time that Leroy Davidson did that down there, the faster pastor thing, was one of the best stock car races I ever seen. And it was all guys who had never raced a car before. It was really good.
You notice how well-sponsored all of those faster pastor cars are?
Oh, and they packed the stands. They came in buses from their churches.
Yeah, they made an announcement in the church last
week.
And
they sold the tickets.
Yeah. It's definitely a good deal, and it's become better and better, and I think it's kind of cool.
I need to get a sponsor because they said I don't have a church, but every racetrack is my church. I mean, that's my church. But
you need to pass around the offering plate.
That's it.
Boy, don't pass it around.
Martin Luther.
Yeah. He's not going to get much at the racetracks with the offering plate, I'll tell you.
They take it out when they pass the plate. They think it's a donation. They give you back the plate. Thanks for the donation, you know. But
When do you think that you'll make it down to Florida again? I don't know, to even visit any of the racetracks, because I want to know if you come back down to Charlotte County for any reason.
There.
When?
I go around there. I go down to Lakeland. I move around a little bit.
If you come back down to Charlotte County.
We go to Orlando once in a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Go to Disney World, do you?
Friday night.
Oh, you're talking about the racetrack.
Yeah.
It's like Disney World there.
Yeah. 50. I belong in Disney World anyway.
Well, they got a nice track at Disney World now.
Well, Bugsy, if I know when you're coming, man, you won't pay to get in the track or whatever track we're going to.
That's for sure.
Yeah, the Reverend's got a hook there. He'll get you in.
The hooker.
Yeah, he's. Oh boy, I definitely want to meet Bugs when he comes into town. If he comes to Charlotte County, say, "Where's this bonehead guy at?" When you come to Charlotte County Speedway, say, "I want to meet this bonehead guy. Is he here tonight?" And
Bonesy.
Yeah, you can call me Bonesy if you want, Bugsy. That's fine.
That's the bonehead.
Yeah.
Have you ever met Bones?
Bones Bouscher? No, I haven't. I would like to talk to him as well.
He's a character. He's a great writer.
I tell you, I've really had a good time with this show today. You know, the nostalgic thing when she first talked about it, you know, I'm like, well, I don't know any of these guys. But you know what? It's been great talking to, you know, yourself and Bill and Lou and the Reverend here. But the Reverend, he's still racing. He don't have any back problems.
Oh, yeah, I do. Well, I still race anyway.
He's got the Lord on his side, so he's going to go out there and deal with it. But, you know, I really had a good time talking to you, Bugs, you know, and we've got to kind of get going and kind of wrap things up here. But if there's any time that you want to come back on the show or you want to talk to us sometime, get with Carol. And, again, if you come to Charlotte County Motorsports Park, look for old Bonesy, for Bonehead. Go ahead, Carol.
Drop me an email.
Bugsy, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show tonight. It's been a great thrill for me. I haven't seen you since I was in my 20s. I'm 65 now.
That's 100 years ago.
Hey, at least 100. Do you mind if I give you a call again?
No, fine. You can email me, too.
Hey, she's a real looker. She's a real looker. Get her to send you some pictures.
You took about 220, right? Thank you so much.
Thank you, all right.
Bugsy, we got your email address, do we?
Yes, I do.
Bugsyberg at webtv.net.
Oh. All right, bud. I'll be in touch.
Hey, buddy.
All right, God bless. Good to talk to you.
Hey, Bugsy.
Welcome back.
Hey, Bugsy. Are you listening? Hello, you there? Oh, he's gone. Too bad. I had something to tell him. I was going to tell him not to let his meatloaf.
We're going to take a break real quick. We're going to be back with Joy Gilder, and we'll see where that goes.
Where is she?
And more from the Reverend.
You're listening to Inside Florida Racing.
Yeah.
Frank Bartles, and this here's my partner, James Brown. As the weather starts getting too hot.
Too hot.
We hope you will reach for one of these. New Van James Brown Wine Cooler.
It tastes good.
They come in three funky flavors. Gravity Grape.
Get down.
Prime of Passion Fruit.
Woo, Timothy.
And my personal favorite, Papaya.
Papaya's got a brand new bag.
It'll get you off faster than a big city lawyer.
Woo!
And a single pack serves 6 to 10. Just like James.
New Bartles and James Brown Wine Coolers. The cooler cooler made in the cooler.
Now behind bars everywhere.
And thank you for your support.
Race fans! Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drotty, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XS Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
Here we go, Inside Florida Racing. You're back. We're back.
Yeah, you're back.
We're back. Let me plug myself in.
We're totally back.
There we go. We're back on. Did we get a hold of Joy or no?
No.
Is she going to miss another one?
No, we're going to try. We didn't give up yet.
So let's get back to what we were just talking about. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to get together? It'd be great to get together 12 of them. But even if you could get together 6 or 8 of these guys that raced together back in those days, like get Boucher here, Bugsy, the Reverend. Bill can't because of his back, right? Or would he get in a four-cylinder?
Leo Cleary's down here in Florida. Pete Hamilton's down here in Florida.
See, you know how to get a hold of him. I think we can do it.
Yeah. I think we can do it, too. But it's going to take a little bit of...
Just a little jostling around. He knows some of these other guys that has some cars.
They show up, I mean, if these guys will show up, like there's going to be a bunch at New Smyrna for Speed Weeks.
Right.
If these guys come down from up north and they raced... I'm sure you get enough of them together. You can put something together. Some of them guys would turn their car loose in a heartbeat. I mean, it would be an honor for them to get somebody like Bugsy in their car or Bill or whoever, you know. And, I mean, that's the thing. I don't think we'd have any problem with getting a car for these guys to drive. I mean, it, you know. And well, just the fact that they would show up would be a big plus.
If they'd show up. I know a track owner that
let them race. Now, these guys are in their 70s. A lot of them have had bouts with cancer and heart problems.
Yes.
So we got to...
I understand that, but you know what?
What?
I agree. They will get in cars.
Oh, we believe that.
When we had Keels and Wheels used to put on the Salute to Racing every year at Sarasota. You had Allison, Yarborough. These guys come down. They climb in them go-karts and go bouncing around out there.
I'm in my 70s. I don't hesitate getting in a car.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You're in your 70s?
Yeah. 71.
This is how you could look fit. See, if you chased your way of living, Rob,
listen,
you'd be better off here now down the road. Trust me.
I say my prayers and eat my vitamins, so maybe I'll look like the Reverend at 70. That would be great.
I'll be 71 in October. That's what my kids get on me. Dad, you got a 70-year-old body and a 17-year-old mind. When are you going to quit? Then you come home with a second-place trophy or a first-place trophy.
If he could only get the body to keep in touch with the mind, it would be great.
Well,
I don't think that age has as much to do with it as keeping your mind straight.
Yes.
That's the thing. People do a lot of things to their bodies and their minds over the years. So, if you can keep your drugs down to a minimum, that even means the ones that are prescribed to you. I don't agree with prescribed drugs.
And let me ask you. Bill, you've been around this stuff a long time, and you go around to all these Florida tracks, and you talk to all the drivers.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of feedback from people. See, it seems to me that we were talking about this a little bit with Bugsy. Everything has kind of changed, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't, as a kid, I couldn't do any of the things today that I did as a kid at 10 and 11, 12 years old. I mean, these kids are little wussies,
to me, from
my point of view.
But
that being said, at the races, people are always talking about, racing's not good. It's not good. But it seems to me that everybody who says that is kind of comparing it to a time in the past when it was a different kind of deal and a different kind of world. And see, because I didn't get into this until about 3 or 4 years before I started Karnak, because I never saw a race. I mean, I liked other kinds of motorsports, but not stock car racing. I'd never been around it. And when I started taking all kinds of people to the track, because I think this is cool. You got to come see this crazy stuff, you know. And I still feel like that a lot of the time. And I take people to the track, and they don't compare it to like 20, 30 years ago, because they don't have that point of reference, and they see this as a pretty cool thing.
They love it.
They love it.
That's right.
So what I'm saying is maybe
it's us.
Think about this?
Friday night, I was at Orlando. For some reason, I had to go to Orlando. I went, and I got a chance to minister to several people, which is what I do. I don't usually watch the races. I'm in the pits for the drivers and the crews, and that's my interest. I really appreciate them. I love these people. And racing, I went to my first race when I was 13 years old. That's 57 years ago. And I, if I see a race, it's fine. If I don't, it's okay. But I want to be there in case something happens to one of these drivers. This is not a game with me. Uh-huh. These guys are important. Uh-huh. And when I see what they're doing and see what's going on, you know, and I respect them, really respect them, and they respect me. I don't preach to them. I don't have to. I just live my life, and I'm there to show them, hey, I'm here if you need me. And if there's anything I can do, I will do it. And it's not too many people want to compare somebody to somebody else. Don't do it. Now, Friday night at Orlando, the place was packed. But I understand they gave a bunch of tickets away.
17,000.
Well, wow. I don't know how many were there.
Was
but,
what I was told by yeah. the official, by the people there at the
well, I don't know. I didn't count them. I mean, but the place was packed. It well, really was.
There were 17,000 tickets given away, and I was told by people from the track that it was 3,500 were in attendance, which is yeah. really
That's
good.
That's amazing. Oh,
yeah. And, you know, I was talking to somebody about it, and they said they don't understand. Orlando on a Saturday night, which I was there one Saturday night, I thought, they must not have told people there was a race going on. There was nobody there. And they said on a Friday night, the place is packed. And, you know, and it was such a blessing for me to see these people and to get in the pits and talk to some of these that I only see once in a while, you know. And we don't need to worry about who's doing what or who's not doing what or our favorites or our not favorites. You know, just enjoy the racing.
I want to say something, Jack, for what you said, and I think that it's amazing how Jack, you folks can't see it. He sits in here on his computer most of the time we're here with his back to us. So when he turns around and he says something, a lot of times I wonder if he even listened to our show today. And he just brought out something that is really a fact, and that it's I'm blind to it because I've been going to the races for so long. I've watched mm-hmm. so many races. So many wrecks. I've heard almost, this sounds like Jack, I've heard it all. I've seen it all.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe you're right. Maybe racing today is just as good, if not better than it used to be. But because it's seen through these old eyes, we see it different. I think you hit it on the head. Maybe we are still putting on a good show.
We are. Oh, I go yeah. every week because I love it, not because I want to punish myself. Yeah. I love it.
I just, as a racer, as how do I want to put this? Remember I told you I stood on the other side of the fence when as a kid, and I looked and said, that's where I want to be. Now, every time I'm on the other side of that fence and they do introductions and I see all those people, Jack sees me out there, he comes out there, what am I into? I'm into the fans. I'm
Ain't
into
no
the
doubt
kids.
About it. You do I'm there, really good.
I'm
man.
Giving it away. I'm every race. I put a kid inside my car, a kid that's walking around and got his hands all over it. Some of them race car drivers are like, get that kid out of here. Not me. I'm going to grab that boy up. It's usually a boy. If it's a girl sometimes, set them inside the driver's seat and their eyeballs about pop out of their head. Now, see, to me, racing is still probably the same to those kids that are looking through that fence as it was to me when I was that age. Mm-hmm. So, Jack, I learn something all the time when I do this show. Learned a lot tonight from the past. Oh, yeah. You, my friend, opened my eyes to something that is in the present. And I hope there's a lot of people listening to this, and I hope that they download this show and listen. And you know what? Maybe we can make racing a little bit better. Maybe we can start looking at it a little bit different. And, maybe it will make it a little bit better for us. Thank you, Jack.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate you saying that.
And
today.
You know,
I really do.
I got a little bit of a thank you here, too, because I'll tell you the truth. I knew these gentlemen years and years ago just from watching them race, and it was never a personal thing. And I knew that I wanted to hear from them again. But I wasn't quite sure how I was going to handle it. And between you and Bill, I can't thank you enough for tonight.
Oh,
guys. Well, you're welcome.
You
no
did.
Doubt.
You yeah. did. I'm sure. You know, Rick Angies has listened to this show, and he always gives me a critique, good, bad, or ugly. And I guarantee you that he's going to give you an A-plus tonight.
So I think
you
it was
did. You did real good.
Fabulous.
And you know the thing that's funny? My grandson, from the time he was born, I took care of him because my daughter was working with my wife in her shop. She's a seamstress. And I had Ethan. He was my buddy. I don't stay home. I go to the race shops. I go to the garages. I go see these race car owners and drivers and stuff. How you doing? What's going on? Anything I can do for you? Ethan was my buddy. He was my sidekick. His third birthday, I was a chaplain at Auburndale. You know who he had at his party? All the drivers and crews and families and the track owner. No kids. That's who he wanted. My daughter said, Dad, what should I do? I said, if that's who he wants, get the invitations ready. And they all came, you know. And, I mean, he was in and out of every race car. I got pictures of him in and out of everybody's race car. Now, his little brother, Pete, could care less. He wants to ride in the tow truck. He don't want to ride in the pace car, you know. And, but, I mean, that's his thing. Now he's got a buddy. His father, his buddy's dad races at DeSoto. He races a quad, this little kid there in the, he's seven now. And he Papa, you know, I would really like to have a quad so I can go with my friend. Well, I'd like to have a quad, too, because that old 68 golf cart I got is, you know, ride a little bit and push a little bit, but it beats walking. But they're into it. They see Papa, and they see that I'm interested in racing. They know all these guys, the monster trucks, when they were at Ocala. I had my grandson up there. He wouldn't go to bed because he was afraid Bigfoot wasn't going to be there in the morning. You know, and they took him for a ride in the trucks. They had him in and out of the haulers. They took pictures with him. You know, this is what we need to do with these kids.
I think you're right, and I think we're going to know racing's changed when the kids don't come down from the grandstands and they don't have that look in their eye and they don't want to talk to you. That's when we're going to know that things are different.
You go to East Bay, and you watch the guy that comes in the winner's circle, and there's 50 kids on the track.
Right.
I mean, everybody runs out and gets a picture made with them. Good. That's great.
You want to excite these kids so that in 10 years, when they become racing age, they're going to still have the same enthusiasm and bring their kids. If we don't keep these kids happy now, we're done for, I think.
Hopefully, and it is a fact, and it is happening, and it's there. It's a good thing that there's a whole breed of kids out there that will continue the racing, continue the tracks. Just like myself, I didn't come from a racing family.
I didn't either.
My family never supported me, really, in racing cars. When I was a kid, maybe racing some go-karts or something, but, you know, I see dads and their sons that have been racing, you know, since the kid was small, and the father helps him get that car and helps him keep it going, and it becomes a family thing between them to where the race is just, you know, just a part of it. It's the working on the car that made it, you know, what it is. So I think you're right. I think the kids of today, if they continue to be fans, they will be the racers and will continue the racing heritage that has been started years ago. Hopefully racing will be good.
I played sports, and I raced, and I boxed, and I did all this. And my father, all he ever said is, you're never going to amount to nothing. You're going to be a bum. Never saw anything that I did. The first time I saw Mark Martin and Matt together at New Smyrna, I cried my eyes out. I said, if my dad had just done one thing with me. Friday night, there was a family at the racetrack, and the son was racing. And the mother started to complain a little bit. And I said, let me tell you something. That boy is sitting in his drugs and his alcohol. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of the time up at Saturday up at Orange County Speedway. I spent a lot of the time with David Wilson and his whole gang, you know, because I do some stuff for the family with their website and this and that. And plus, they had a nice, cool trailer.
Yeah.
And you know, here's David. He's 18 now. You know, he grew up here racing in Florida. You've seen David.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And his brothers, his sisters, his girlfriends, his mother, his father. And then it's so amazing. On the other side of it, here's his crew. Dick Anderson.
Yeah.
Junior Purcell. The Burkhalters.
Yeah.
I mean, Burkhalters. It was unbelievable. I mean, it's an amazing
If Junior was collection. There, they must have had plenty of beer.
It was funny. It's funny hanging around that yeah. crowd. But you know, there's a whole family atmosphere right there. It was funny kind of watching that all day, you know.
You know, the thing for me is when I came down here 10 years ago, I didn't know anybody. I started going to races, and I got to be a chaplain, and I started meeting these guys in the pits, the Andersons and Rich Pratt. And I don't want to start naming names. I'll forget some. But I take an interest in them. I'm in their trailers. I'm telling them, hey, before the race starts, get your group together. Let's pray, because it's important to me. And these guys, some of the guys that you least expect, will come and say something to you that just blesses your heart. B.J. McLeod, last year at New Smyrna, he won a race, and I went to congratulate him in the tech area, and he said something. And I didn't hear what he said, so I went into his trailer, and I said, B.J., I'm sorry, with all the noise out there, I didn't hear what you said. And he said, Chaplain, I just want to thank you for being here for me. He said, you don't realize when I'm in that lineup and I'm sitting there waiting to get on the track, I am so tense and so wound up. And just the fact that you come by and shake my hand and pray for me, he said, it just causes me to relax. And I don't know about anybody else, but I appreciate you being here. I don't need a pat on the back. I'm doing what I feel I should do. But when you can make a difference in anybody's life, to me, it's worth the trip.
Saving souls at the racetrack is a tough business.
But you know what? You don't have to preach to them.
That's
right. If you just live your life, if they see something different, and I've had it happen to me, you know, what is it about you? You're a race car driver, and you came out of the streets of Boston, and you did this and that. Where is that? That guy died.
Yeah.
This is the new me. And, you know, I really wish I had your peace, and I wish I had this, and I wish, you know, you can have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't have to preach. I just have to live my life.
Well, the Lord's in my life, I'll tell you that. Every time before I head out there, my prayers are said. And, you know, I don't live a perfect life, but I'm a good person. And I think it's important that people try their best to strive to be a good person and try to be, you know, godlike in some ways. And it's tough out there on the racetrack when people are grinding you up and turning you sideways and you're cussing them inside, you know. Yeah. And that's why I always wondered, during that faster race, do you curse anybody?
No, I don't curse anybody anytime, you know.
Well, you're not actually cursing, but...
No, it's fun.
That Judas Iscariot...
I have these racer's prayers that I give out at every track. And there's probably 3,000 of them roaming around the country and up in Canada, because I try to make sure all the drivers get one to put on the dash to remind them that I pray for them every day.
What, have you never seen me at the racetrack before? How come you never give me one of them? You've been going to Charlotte County recently?
Because I don't like you.
I know. Nobody does. Nobody does.
No. You know, it's what you say is so true, though. The little things that you do for these drivers, because I feel the same way you do. I love every single one of them. And a while back, I bought a whole bunch of Racing Angel pins, and I gave them to all the super late model drivers that I knew at the time. And sometimes you think they just throw them away or they don't care. Well, a month or two later, I got, I was talking to Wayne Anderson and Billy Bigley, and they don't forget.
No.
Oh, gee, I think you saved my life, or things like that.
Yeah.
So that's why I go through the pits every week, and I hug everybody, because they are special people to us.
Well, that's when I asked if they had somebody that were going to pray in the driver's meeting at Charlotte County. They said, no. I said, I'm here. I will do it. And the drivers thanked me for coming down there, taking my time. And that's when I said, I got these racers' prayers. And these guys were coming by and saying, can I have four or five of them? Can I have three or four of them? Absolutely. You know, they're donated to me. They're made. And that's what I have them for. And so, I mean, racing is important, and the people in racing are important.
But Rob could probably follow up with this question. But there's probably a lot of people that come to the Florida Stock Car message board on that old website, Carnac.com, and probably wish that maybe you would pray for the track owners and promoters.
And you know I
what
do.
I'm sure you do. What do you say to the people who maybe want to go a little overboard at yanking the owners and promoters' chains?
Put their shoes on.
There you go.
Walk sound in like their them. Shoes. You sound like them.
Yeah. Four I mean, words. Put their you know, shoes on.
Do you know how many races I won sitting in the grandstand? Many. I had a lady one time at Hudson, New Hampshire, when I went up before the feature, I'm up in the stands with my friends, and she said, you know, if you would only do this and only do that, you could have got by this guy and you could have done this. I said, you come ride with me in the feature and tell me how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't want to do that. We think it's easy and we got a better idea, like somebody said earlier. We could run this racetrack. Really? We could run it into the ground, you know. And, I mean, the thing is, it's always easier for us to do it than for somebody else. And I've been around, like I said, I've been around this racing thing for 57 years, and I don't want to run a track. I'm very happy being the chaplain and let them run it, you know, because I see it, and I hear the criticism, and I hear the complaints, and I hear the whole thing. Everybody, Henry Ford had a better idea, you know, and everybody's got a better idea. They know more about racing, but they're, you know, you're going to be criticized no matter what you do. You're always going to do something wrong.
I think there's people out there that have some really creative ideas. However, the way to do that is to call the track owner and talk to them, not smear their name, tell them to boycott stupid things that are going to take our tracks away from us.
Yeah.
It's not helping them. So if you got a complaint or you got an idea or something creative, call the track owner. I'm sure he'd be glad to hear from you.
I got a tip for this. We try to give promoters a tip every week, don't we, Rob?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got one from North Carolina that I maybe somebody in Florida has done this or doing this. I don't know of it.
Have fried bologna?
No, the fried bologna, they ought to bring that down. But I'll tell you, that track.
Yeah.
We're going to put up a photo gallery tonight, probably about 4 o'clock but, in the morning. But I took like 400 pictures. That track was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it was immaculately kept and really well put together. I mean, great fencing, you know, top shelf, everything, everywhere.
Yeah.
Great seats, probably 7,000-8,000 people, 10,000. A lot of seats there,
yeah.
All aluminum, you know, really nice. But they had this cool thing. I was getting my headphones set together so I could listen in to the ASA officials during the race, you know, so we'd know what's going on. And I inadvertently was screwing around with it, and all of a sudden I hear them. They had the announcer's voice from the local guy. And, of course, Matt Prier, the ASA announcer, was with him. And what it does is they broadcast that, and you can listen to the announcer with your scanner.
Mm.
And I thought that was really cool because when you're sitting at a race, you know, most places you cannot hear the announcer while a race is going on.
Right.
You know, you have to wait till a break in the action at these local tracks, small tracks. This was really cool. You could sit there with a set of earphones, so it not only protects your ears, but you can hear the announcer described the action out on the track.
Well, you know, we used to do that at Sunshine. Was one of the places where they actually got Craven Moorhead, Doug Brewer, who started that pirate radio stuff with me way back then. We actually went to the racetracks and set up a small 1-watt transmitter where you could come in, transmit on FM, and they'd sell the headphones with the AM/FM so you could hear what was going on live just by listening to regular AM/FM radio. Which is legal. It's legal to do that at 1 watt, you know, just in that small area. So that's something to think about.
Well, I didn't ask how they were doing it. Was that a remote mic setup or what?
No, it was basically a transmitter that would transmit on 88.5 or 88.7, whatever you set it on.
Yeah.
So anybody that was there close by.
Yeah, I forget which channel it was coming in on, like 170 or something.
I don't know how they did it on a scanner, though, because you'd have to have a radio that was mic'd up all the time.
It was UHF or VHF.
They must have just tied the thing on it. It seemed like the radio would get hot.
Well, I'm going to find out. And then
that was interesting.
I've already bought a franchise to sell scanners. It's all about the money. Yeah.
Hey, yeah. You know, and maybe they could just let Jason run the races over there in Charlotte County.
You know the thing, but you know the thing that's pitiful? When you go to a track and there's a sign that says no cameras, no scanners, no. Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
I want to hear what's going on with some of these drivers. You know, years ago we were at Richmond, and Michael Waltrip, they're in the middle of the race, and he's going down the backstretch in a pack, and I'm listening to him, and he says, talking to his spotter, he says, "Have you ever noticed how the governor of Virginia kind of looks like Lyle Lovett?" And I'm thinking, that's got a lot to do with racing, you know.
I think he's still doing stuff like that today.
Concept.
Is he still doing that today, talking about Lyle Lovett and all kinds of crazy stuff instead of racing?
I don't know. It's pitiful. It's too bad. It's a shame. But, you know, but the thing is, no scanners, no pictures, no nothing, no cameras. No
involvement.
That's kind of silly.
Come in, bring your money, and sit up there and shut up, and we'll tell you when you can go home.
I think the pictures being taken is very important. You know, video cameras, all of it, the whole nine yards, as long as they're not bringing something there that's inhibiting the person sitting next to them. But give them a memory, let them take it home.
Well, you can't bring your video camera because they got somebody that's taking videos that they're going to sell.
Right.
So what? Right. I'm not going to buy your video anyway. Right. So, you know, I mean, that's just how it is. But I don't think it's fair for a lot of these people that are paying to get in. They have a car, the car owners or whatever. And no, you can't listen to your driver unless you're in the pits or up on the roof, and you can't bring your camera and you can't bring your video camera.
I tell you, what do we got? We got somebody calling in. Did Joy ever call us? Boy, she's on our you know what list now.
She's actually a very busy lady, and probably something really big came up. So I will in advance apologize for her, and we'll get her back on. Next time we're going to hog tie her and drag her in.
What do you have next week, Carol?
Excuse me?
What do we have next week?
Next week we are going to be highly promoting the race up at South Florida Speedway.
Yeah. Cecil?
Not
Williams?
Columbia.
Memorial.
Columbia Motorsports Park.
Cecil
sorry.
Williams Memorial 100.
The 25th.
And we are going to have, of course, Patrick Williams will be on. He requested some other drivers that are close friends of his. And I'll tell you the truth, I'm having a mental block here because you caught me off guard. James Powell, for sure, will be on the radio show.
Scott McAllister.
Hold on.
But there's another driver.
Hold on.
Chaplain Bill will be there.
Let's talk about the Aster Stud for a second, because I talked to him the other day and told him I was going to mention his name. The Aster Stud, James Powell III. That's his nickname. That's what we used to call him. He's from Aster, Florida. He's going to be on next week?
Yes.
Fantastic. Folks, make sure you're listening.
Nice guy. Yeah, nice guy.
And you
talk
about a prankster.
This is going to be a really big event.
Talk about a prankster. He's a prankster.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And we'll talk about some of that stuff and some of the racing times. I would have liked to race this weekend because we would have got to race each other again. We haven't got to race each other in a while. What were the other?
Well, let me tell you, they got the race is paying $3,000 to win, but they have awesome. So they got like the leader of the first lap is like $250, sponsored by Ocala Speedway. Now imagine this,
Mike Peters coughing it up,
to sponsor a race at another track.
Cecil was a big part of Ocala.
That's right. Very cool.
Tim Russell, that's one.
Lap 50 leader sponsored by a Travel Country RV, $500 and so on. There's a whole bunch of those, and there's too many to name now. They got sponsorships. They got a big parade in town.
Yeah, they're going to take the cars through town.
Man,
this
I'd love
is
to go
awesome
to that thing.
Deal, man.
I wish I could get somebody to take my car up there for me in one of these big old trailers that they got.
They got all the cars are going to be on display at S&S food stores on Friday. The parade is on Friday, too, isn't it? No, the parade's on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. A parade of cars and stars through the streets of Lake City. Sponsored by the Lake City Chamber of Commerce.
Whoa.
Wow.
How'd they work that out?
That's called PR.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Well, it's funny because Kim was at Orlando, and her brother is the manager up there, and she introduced me, and Tim said, I want you to be, please come up.
That's
he
cool.
Said,
In fact, I think Tim Lake is going to be on with us, too, if I'm not mistaken.
So Erica and I will be up there. I'm going to bring my camper up to Ocala this weekend because they're doing something for us. And
That's cool.
That's
I thought we were playing exit music already.
Yeah, with Bill.
Hello?
Chaplain Bill's phone comes on.
Hey Bill's going to take a call. That's right. It never know. It could be in something important.
It rings when the Saints go marching in. That's cool.
Bill actually made a CD and writes and sings quite a few hymns and songs.
And as another programming note, while Rob's over there going through this thing, reading it, check this out, Carol. Tomorrow, we're going to do an interview that's not going to happen to Wednesday. On Wednesday's ASA, the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane show, we got this long interview we're doing with Butch Miller, who was an old ASA star on the short tracks.
Good
guy, too. And I watched him deal with a situation up there at Orange County Speedway when these guys, Sean Murphy and two of the other guys, had to have their carburetors pulled on pre-qualifying inspection. They took them and said, you got to put one of our new ones on.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they're tough with this. But
how he handled it. Butch works with Sean Murphy, and he handled it in such a cool way with the officials that the officials, when they were done dealing with him, they were thanking him.
Right, right.
I mean, it was really special. And plus, we're going to have a lot of the Florida guys, Florida racers, on. We're going to have at least three or four Florida racers on our show on Wednesday night, the ASA Fastlane show.
That's great. I like the lap sponsors thing. I think that other promoters ought to look at this because it gets a lot of the people in the community, and not only people that are racing, to get involved. And even if they sponsor, because there must be so many of them, they're going to be sponsoring other laps than what they
have. Oh, absolutely. Fast Card has been doing this for quite a few years now. They mm-hmm. they do a lot of lap sponsorship with, like, the Clyde Hart Memorial, and particularly the Governor's Cup, the Florida yeah. Governor's Cup
right.
is very big with the lap sponsorship deal, which adds a lot of money to the
sure.
the purse.
This is sharp, this thing that they sent out here. Let's give yeah. a call out there to them at Columbia Motorsports Park. Yeah. They've been, you know, getting with us here over the last few weeks and talking yeah. about this, and I really want to go to this. I want to race in this.
We're going
to
be broadcasting really that race live, and I tell you, you should go.
I want to race
in because then we can mention your name even more.
There yeah. are so Listen. Many good things going yeah. on in Florida racing right now. If everybody would just think on the positive and look and see all this stuff right. that's going on. Now,
Carol, don't go overboard. Don't go overboard.
Jack, okay. let's your camera. Bring your video camera. I will be doing the invocation and the national anthem.
All right.
I don't want you crying anymore.
Okay, good. All right.
Well, and would you please pray that he quit picking on me?
No.
And that's right where we started. Oh.
Could you pray to get me some sponsor money so I can go to this Cecil Williams race and that pray that my wife can get
Chaffin
off of
Bill,
work.
Tell him.
I'm
tell
praying
him.
To get me sponsor money so I'll have gas to get there.
The
you can
Lord
ride with
helps
me.
Those who helps themselves.
You can ride
God
with me.
God help those who get caught helping themselves.
Well, listen, how about if we say goodnight to everybody and thank all the wonderful guests that we've had tonight, Bug Stevens, Bill Wimble, Lou Boyd, Chaplain Bill.
I like to call him the Reverend.
It's fun.
Awesome night. Thank yeah. you so much. Thank you, Rob Elting, for bailing me out. Love
you're welcome.
You.
Anytime.
Thank you, and I really appreciate being here. Thanks.
Hey, Jack, did you have a good time
tonight?
Good night,
everybody.
Yeah, this is Real Racing USA.
No, it's
Inside Florida Racing.
Yes, Inside Florida Racing. Don't forget it there, Jack. And remember, it's not Jack from Karnak.
It's Jack from Inside Florida Racing. When you do the St. Pete Boogie, you're really gonna have
got to do the St. Pete Boogie. I'm gonna jump until I fall. I've got to do the St. Pete Boogie. I'm gonna jump until I fall. Bar hopping and high topping. Hey Lord, can't you hear me call? We'll be right back.
When you're doing the St. Pete Boogie, don't be contemplating crime. When